Welcome to another edition of the Insurance Requirements Podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Correll. You won't have to look too hard to find news of a cybersecurity event. They're all over the place these days. Whether it's ransomware, network intrusions, or data breaches, these events are occurring on a more and more regular basis. Rather than stand idly by waiting for something like that to happen to his company, our guest today took a proactive approach to data security. We're joined today by John Corin. He's the co-founder and CEO of Xylo, a software platform that helps independent insurance agencies move into the digital era. Their platform enables modernized workflows, online data intake for new insurance customers, as well as integrations with carrier quoting systems. We begin our conversation today discussing how he found his way into insurance, how he's helping independent agencies thrive during the virtual work revolution, and how technology startups can utilize online insurance platforms to find innovative ways to cover their business risk. Then we dive into the deep end of cybersecurity. John walks me through Xylo's data security philosophy, shares tips around how you should be framing cybersecurity in your own business, and what steps you should take to gain certification around your security practices. We then wrap up by talking about some risks that you face as a business by not putting security top of mind. And now, on to the show. All right, John Corin joins me today on another edition of the Insurance Requirements Podcast. He is the co-founder and CEO of Xylo, an insurtech company that helps independent insurance agencies move into the digital era. John, welcome. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Andrew. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, so first question off the bat, did you always, you know, want to get into the insurtech space? You know, my experience in insurance has always kind of shown that people either get into insurance on accident or you know, they set out from the very beginning to do that. So how did you end up in insurtech?
That's a good question. I was definitely someone who got in by accident. To give you a frame of reference, my first company that I started was actually a carpooling company. Not like Uber, but true carpooling. And so I was far away from insurance before getting into it. But as a software engineer and as a product guy, once I kind of took a peek under the hood and saw what was going on in the insurance industry, that's when I decided this is something that I need to get into. And to answer your question about how I got started into it, my co-founder and childhood best friend, Ellie, is actually an ex-insurance agent and agency owner. And so we were, you know, talking one day and he was telling me about these problems that he was having with his software. And then he showed it to me and then I had PTSD. and as a product guy, I was like, we really got to work on this. Like, this is the next business we're going to build. And so we just went with it.
Awesome. And so what problems were those? You know, what problems did you kind of uncover when you're taking a peek under the hood?
Well, you know, at the time I was working as a product manager at a company called PRA, which used to be Parallel 6, so it was acquired. And so I was in the tech space. I was in the B2B SaaS tech space. And we would use software that was nice. It had great user experiences. You know, they were enhancing their platform weekly to make the user experience better. And so everything was tried, true, tested, and the product was always evolving. That's what I was used to. And it made things efficient. I mean, if one thing didn't work or it wasn't the best experience 1 week, 2 months later, it would be amazing. And what I noticed immediately, so I'm not going to call out any system specifically, but the system that he was using, the user, the UI for one, looked like it was built in the 80s. And I was like, how do you guys like do X, Y, and Z? We were talking about the sales process. How do you guys manage your clientele? How do you guys like generate a pipeline? How do you guys generate a process? Do all these things. He's like, oh, switched over to an Excel sheet. He was like, well, first we write down all the information on a piece of paper and then we put it in this Excel and look how I got all this color coded. And I'm like, you guys are spending X thousand dollars a month on this software, right? And you're using it as like a digital filing cabinet. And he was like, yeah, well, that's what everybody does. And I was like, oh man. And so, you know, to kind of nail it down, the real problem that I saw that it caused with his agency is it just made him significantly more inefficient, especially when you compare him to what a modern tech company has today.
Gotcha. And so, yeah, that efficiency, you know, it seems like more and more companies are striving for that, right? Just, you know, automating some of the high touch, you know, low value tasks that you have in your business so that you can focus more of your time on those tasks that require more touch and more expertise. So, all right. So this kind of gets the juices flowing, right? Is this what led to Xylo, or is there some steps in between that got you there?
There's also some steps in between. So my co-founder's dad has been in the industry for over 30 years. He started an agency from the ground up 30 years ago. His wife told him to get a real job. And then he started his entrepreneurial journey doing that. And now he's got one of the more successful agencies out in Delaware. They do really well. And it was him who kind of brought up some of the other factors in the industry that really got us into it. So I'm sure you've probably heard by now, Lemonade had IPO'd as of July or something like that. It was Lemonade and a couple of other digital insurance companies that started to shine more of a spotlight on the inefficiencies that Ellie had in his agency. And so his dad would look at that and he'd look at Geico and he would be like, why can't my agency operate like this? And that's actually what got us started working together. So I was actually just as a freelance project was building a website for his dad. He didn't realize, and I've known them since I was about 10. He didn't realize that I got into software and he's like, oh, can you build me a website like this? And he started showing me, you know, these digital insurance companies and kind of the experiences that they were providing. And that is actually what led us into building Xylo. And so the original goal was to try to build something that emulated the experience of a Lemonade or a Hippo or a Zebra and give it to the agencies so that they can compete with those companies.
And so when you say experiences like some other digital companies, these are more along the information gathering stage rather than, you know, doing it over the phone and having somebody take it down, like you said, on a piece of paper. This would be a digital platform where the user kind of generates the experience, right? They're the ones handling the input of that information.
Right, exactly. And, you know, that's when we first started. We've obviously gone deeper into an agency's business now because a lot of agencies are, you know, referral based or over the phone. But when we first started, you know, we really saw the opportunity in creating a similar experience to what you would see on a Lemonade and giving it to an agency. And a good example is my fiance, her father recently had to shop for home insurance. He's 62. He's had the same home insurance company for 12 years and all of a sudden they raised the rates on him. And at 62 years old, he still refused to go to a traditional agency. He just wanted to find something online that would give him a quote. And he wanted to see if that quote was something that he was worth it for him. And so that was kind of, and this was really recent. This was maybe 2 months ago. That was kind of the, you know, the shift that we were anticipating when it came to people shopping for insurance. And so we wanted to make sure that agencies were well equipped with a good experience when they did look locally and they did find a mom and pop agency. If they had that experience, it would be something that a customer would go down.
Gotcha. And so what Xylo does is kind of creates that digital experience online for independent agents that are looking to, like you said, get into that digital era. And so it's not necessarily trying to replace an independent agent. Is that correct? Is it's more of kind of future-proofing them, if you will.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you know, as well as I do, the independent agencies are a very strong group, right? They kill it in the market of insurance. And so our goal is really just to equip them with the right technology so that the agencies who are progressive and the agencies who are forward thinking can really thrive in this market. And so that's the first part of it, right? Agencies kind of use a drag and drop form builder like you would see on Google Form or Typeform. But we really control what the ultimate experience looks like as a program, as a software. And so when they create the questions that they need, let's say it's like a life and health form, or if it's an auto form, you know, it then kind of the experience, like I said, is controlled so that it's a good experience for that customer as they're filling out the questions that the agency needs.
So users of Xylo, you had mentioned that, you know, your first experience with an independent agent had kind of shown that they were accustomed and okay with using a very manual process. What's been the adoption rate like, or what's been the feedback that you've got when you're in an independent insurance agent's office when you pitch this idea to go digital? Is it something that's being welcomed? Is there some hesitation? What's been your experience there?
You know, honestly, when we first started, you know, a couple of years back, we tried with everybody. And so we found there were a percentage of agencies that were very adverse to going digital. And we found that there were also a large percentage of agencies really looking for this type of thing. So it really just depended on the agency. And now that we're further along, we know exactly which agencies are going to be more open to this kind of thing. Most of the time they're already digital. So we're not a marketing company ourselves. We don't have to convince a company to go digital or to build a website. It's usually agencies that are looking for this type of experience because they've seen those digital competitors. Those are the ones that we end up clicking really well with. And it's actually a large percentage of agencies out there.
Got it. And so far, you know, now that we're in the throes of a global pandemic, have you seen more inbound leads coming from your business model with more, I guess, in-person meetings, either slowed down or cut off? Have you seen any uptick in activity?
So we don't have any in-person meetings. It's all virtual. It always has been because we have clients all over the United States. And it actually, we've seen, as you expected, we saw an increase in business. And it's just because a lot of agencies kind of were put into shock when they no longer could meet face-to-face with a potential customer, or people stopped picking up the phones. And so a lot of customers started thinking more about what their digital space looked like. And so Xylo, you know, off the bat, when you look at one of the forms and kind of how the experience is laid out and how it's tailored to insurance, Xylo becomes an obvious thing that people want to check out. Not necessarily everyone's not buying, but people always want to check out what's going on.
So one of the things that I've found is kind of this common thread of feedback, doing this podcast and talking to startup founders, about their own insurance buying journey is this experience of the information gathering process, right? It's a lot. It's a lot of forms. There's a lot of paperwork. A lot of it's still manual. You know, so Xylo looks to solve that problem. Can you kind of walk me through start to finish what that process looks like for an insurance buyer and how that's different from that traditional model?
Right. Yes, that's a good point that I can make. So we both know how the traditional model works, right? Someone goes to a website. On there might be some sort of contact form, or maybe it's a longer form that has a few questions for your, you know, vehicles and drivers, whatever it might be. However it goes, it gets submitted to the agent. Ellie's agency used to have it come in as an email, and then maybe a CSR would take that information and put it somewhere, right? And so that's how it happens when they go onto the web itself. If it's like a phone referral, the agent's calling them, and at the same time, they're writing down the information, and then they're transferring that into their rater or AMS, and then potentially if it's a commercial policy, in a court or a supplemental, the agent then has to kind of manually drive that entire process. And so with Xylo, the way that it changes is we try to put the burden of collecting and transferring data on the system and not on the agent himself, right? Because ultimately what the agent needs to be focused on is building that relationship and you know, advising the client on their insurance, not necessarily like writing everything down and manually putting in. So with Xylo, an agent can send a form to a customer, or the agent can have a form facing on their website that a customer finds. Once they go through that quoting experience, is what we're calling it, Xylo then integrates that data into their existing systems. There are a large array of agency management systems and raters that we integrate with that you know, so that when you put data into the system, it'll integrate into those existing systems. Now, if you're using Accord Forms, let's say for the commercial side of the business, we actually have a feature on the platform that allows you to integrate that data into an Accord form. And so you can download it straight from the PDF. And so it gives the agent the ability to create kind of this tailored digital form that doesn't look like an Accord or doesn't look like a contact form. It's the agent's kind of questions that they need, but it's that Xylo quoting automation experience. It gives them the ability to create that and then automate the data going into those different systems. Then once you get it into that system, for if it's a rater, for example, then you go in, you rate the policy, and you kind of follow up with that customer. If it's a commercial, commercial policy, you then send off that Accord that's already pre-populated to your customer, and the data is already in your agency management system. And so you're more worried about, like I said, building that relationship with the client and less worried about getting the data into all these different places.
No, that's really awesome. Because like I said, the insurance buying process is very, very data heavy. So anything that can kind of alleviate that for both the buyer and the agent, like you said, to get focused more on the actual risk advising part of that relationship, where, you know, I think we would all agree is where the real value is. And so kind of pivoting into speaking of that value of the risk advice, you know, I kind of wanted to hear about what your insurance buying process was like with Xylo.
You know, we had an interesting experience. So it's really funny. I have been up and down some of the simpler Accord forms, like the 125, 126, 130, 140. I've literally built programs around these things. And so I know like every single element on an Accord form. And same goes for like most of the systems that agencies work with, all their AMSs and raters. I've like completely deduced all the spec sheets. And so I know about 80% of the 7,500 variables there are in insurance. I've also completely mapped out AL3 files and like I've dove deep into that, but it was still a confusing experience for me buying insurance, as weird as that sounds. What kind of
things were most confusing to you during that process?
Honestly, it was, we had a different experience. And so let me go into that first, actually. So we signed up for a platform called Gusto. And have you heard of Gusto before, Andrew?
I have not heard of Gusto. Tell me a little bit more about them.
Okay. So Gusto is a software platform for HR. And it's a large multi-billion dollar company. They've done a great job. They've turned kind of HR software into something that's easy. And so we run all of our payroll. We do all of our HR stuff on Gusto. And then when it came to the point where we've decided to move a lot of our contractors to W-2, we obviously had to get workers' compensation and a couple of other insurance policies. Gusto actually already anticipated that. And so they started pushing on us this company called AppIntego. It's A-P-I-N-T-E-G-O. Have you heard of them?
I have heard of them, yeah.
Okay. I'm not really sure what their background is. I don't know if they're a completely digital agency or if they're an independent agency that just has like a really smooth system, but they've got some relationship with Gusto where Gusto was just pushing them. They were saying, hey, you know, it was an automated thing. They're like, hey, talk to our rep at AppIntego. They can help you with your workers' comp policy. This is a computer message, not a human telling me that. And I'm like, okay. So I click into this, I click in basically that I'm interested. And then we get this form. It's a very simple form. It's got maybe 3 steps, 4 questions each step. I start filling in some of the basic questions that you would think, you know, number of employees, expected income, or different things like that. Then we get a message from a guy named Nick from AppIntego. We get an email from him. And he's like, hey, I just need to ask you like 1 or 2 more questions, right? But interestingly enough, I'm still confused at this point. I'm not really sure what's going on. Maybe it's because I've seen what these Accord forms look like, and I feel like we're just missing a ton of information that they usually collect. I don't know. I'm kind of out of the loop at this point, but I just keep moving forward. And then all of a sudden, he's like, okay, we're good to go. Check Gusto. I check Gusto. there is like a policy or a quote ready for us. And of course I sent it to who we know in the independent space to make sure that it was a good quote and good, it was good for Xylo. And they said it was good. Apparently there's this new pay as you go type workers comp policy. Yep. And so that's what we went with. We, you know, if we had an independent agency sign off on it, as opposed to trying to sell us it, it seemed pretty good with us. So we just kind of clicked buy, and then it generated not only the workers' comp accord that we needed to sign, but also the, all the traveler's policy declaration page stuff. Okay. And so all that was generated automatically. And then I just signed it and I was done. Knowing what I know about the insurance industry, like I said, I was kind of confused. I was like, when does the heavy interaction data entry come in? And it just never came. So it was a unique buying experience for me.
Interesting. Yeah. So I've seen some of these types of companies pop up over the last few years with the boom in insurtech. And, you know, it's interesting because there's more and more reliance on kind of third-party data integration where, you know, this is publicly available data that some companies have not necessarily leaned on using, right? So they rely on getting all of the data furnished from the buyer versus, you know what, like, for example, I'm sure in the process somewhere, you know, in the HR benefits, you probably entered, let's say, your address, right? So they had that they could pull into their system and say, okay, well, public records show that it's this type of building, it was built in this, you know, and so there's information on that out there. So rather than saying, you know, hey, John, you know, here's an accord form or something similar to fill out, don't worry about it. We've got it. We've pulled in all that information. And the feedback that I've heard is similar to yours. It's kind of like, wow, I was expecting more questions. And yeah, having it verified by somebody that's an independent agent was, I have to imagine, you know, a really good feeling. It's like, okay, like maybe I can't trust this.
That's exactly where my mind was going. At first I was like, maybe there's a, you know, increase in the rate because of the experience that we had, or there's got to be something off about this. But no, we had a very, you know, experienced independent agency tell us that it was a good policy and that we should take it. And we were like, okay, we will. So yeah, it was interesting.
And so you said that you started off with the workers' compensation quote because of the Gusto platform. I guess in their experience, they've probably built profiles on companies that are similar to yours and say, you know, okay, at this stage, you're probably going to grow into, you know, we've had certain events happen. And in our experience, the next event is that you're signing W-2 employees, or maybe you're moving into a physical location. So you had the workers' comp policy. What did the rest of that journey look like? Were there similar, you know, marketing messages where they had anticipated your needs in similar ways?
Yeah, they're continually doing that. They're trying, you know, they try to push different benefits on us that we might not be offering right now. And it's very subtle and it doesn't go away, but it's not annoying. It's not like a notification or a pop-up. It's just on the side at all times for when we're ready. And so we live in that platform for all payroll. Anytime we add an employee, we send offers through that platform. Employees sign all their documents through that platform. So they know that we spend X amount of time in that platform a month. They know that we see those things. And so when we add specific additional benefits to for our W-2 employees, I mean, it's going to be as easy as clicking a button, at least to indicate that we're ready to move forward. I don't know what the process looks like after that.
Interesting. And for the listeners out there, I promise this is not a paid advertisement for Gusto. I'm generally interested in John, what you have to say. And so you had mentioned that so all of your offers are made through that platform. Does it can it recognize when you say, okay, I've got an accepted offer, and so that means I've got new work comp exposure? Are you getting, you know, emails from Nick or someone at Appintego that says, you know, maybe we want to add this to your pay-as-you-go work comp policy?
No, okay. We literally, we had four employees come on last month and never got an email from Nick. My assumption is that Gusto and AppIntego are linked up or synced mm-hmm. up. And so I haven't had to talk to Nick about anything for this specific issue.
Gotcha. Yeah. I was just curious because some of the other feedback that I've got from prior guests is, you know, the endorsement process, right? Adding new exposures to a policy or getting something, added to the policy during the term, depending on what company you're with, can take 4 to 5 emails. And so, when you're talking about this, I was like, that would be really cool if it could, take that anticipation a step further and maybe some of those other events, but hey, maybe a future down the road. So when it comes to, your experience in the insurance industry, having experience in independent agencies, what type of tips would you offer our listeners as it relates to risk management? Maybe some of the things that you focused on early on with Zylo.
Can you go in a little bit deeper on the question?
Yeah, absolutely. So when you set out to build Zylo, I guess what I would want to get at is, what types of steps did you take early on, especially as it relates to like IT security for your platform and things that you were thinking about very early on that you built into the fabric of your business?
Right. That's a good question. So I actually came from a health tech company. And so in the health tech company, we were also building a smart forms platform a lot farther along. I wasn't the CEO of that company. I was just an employee. But our platform had to be HIPAA compliant. And we also had to follow a couple of security-based, we had to follow a couple of security-based guidelines in order to get in with some of the enterprise level clinical research organizations that we were selling to. One of them was an OWASP security check. And so I guess my recommendation for anyone who's building a company is figure out what regulations your industry has. Figure out what regulations your industry has and make sure that you're compliant with those regulations at the very least. And then if you don't have any heavy duty regulations, just make sure that you are keeping the data, not just your customers, but any end users' data safe and as safe as possible. And so you might want to go through, like, for example, an OWASP security check to see if you are really protecting your end users from security risks. That's coming from someone who's a software engineer. So I kind of take a technical approach to, that kind of advice. But you just want to make sure that their data is safe, because if you're irresponsible with their data, then you don't really deserve to have it.
Absolutely. And so when you say safe, what does that look like? So for someone like a company like Zylo, right, you're working with independent agents on both the personal line side. So, things like homeowners insurance, auto, maybe you had alluded to life, as well as commercial. So you're likely dealing with personally identifiable information, business information. What does safe look like when it comes to that type of data?
Good question. So it depends on the type of data. Personally identifiable information in software development should really be one way, which means that it's really hard to pull that data back. And so this prevents the kind of ability for some sort of hacker or anybody really to get access to that data. And then when it comes to things like, important, really sensitive information, like maybe social security numbers or driver's license, you should always be encrypting that information and like to a high degree. And so there's in the OWASP security check, when you do what's called tokenization, which is the encryption of some sort of text, they expect you to use 128 bits in that encryption. That just means that, let's say I have, a token that is used for identifying that you are who you say you are, Andrew. It's 128 characters long. And so you really just want to look at a security check like an OWASP or something of that nature, maybe even a HIPAA. You could take it to that extreme. And you want to try to follow the guidelines that they provide, because it will keep your customers' data safe. And that's the whole, like I said, that's the responsibility of hosting someone else's data.
Gotcha. And so these types of security checks, I've never been through one personally or involved in a business, but give me a, kind of an idea of how intense something like that is to seek a certification of that level. What kind of goes into that?
Oh, it's really intense. HIPAA is a lot more intense than OWASP. OWASP is something that your dev team could do in a couple of months if you're starting from ground zero. HIPAA, for example, the company that I was at, Parallel 6, it took them 2 years to become HIPAA compliant. And it's just because in the health tech space, any personally identifiable information like a name or an email or something of that nature has super intense security that needs to be layered behind so that those, the people that the data represents are protected. And so to avoid going into technical detail, just know that this 2-year process of becoming HIPAA compliant was driven by like an entire dev team. And so I'm sure there are people that have done it faster, but it just shows how difficult it is to become compliant with when it comes to certain things. But you have to have that level of intensity when you're talking about data security, especially if you're, for example, in California, where they have really upped their data security and privacy laws here.
Yeah, no, you're right. With what is that, CCPA out in California? There's been, especially on the commercial side, there's been a lot of talk about what that's going to look like, right? I think there was some confusion around the start date due to the pandemic and businesses may or may not have been ready for that to go live. So it's interesting. What's been your experience so far with CCPA?
Well, it's interesting. We didn't have as big of an issue with it. So California, typically they're with the CCPA, they're looking after bigger companies that are hosting a lot more data. We'll get there. We're not there today. The funny thing about it is so intense that there are companies building businesses around it. And so it becomes a driver of a business model. We were in an accelerator called Accelerprise based in San Francisco. And there was this company called DataShips. All the founders were European and where they're from in Europe, this kind of data privacy already exists. The intensity of it that California is now coming to. Mm-hmm. And so they saw what the environment was like already from where they are in Europe. They knew what California was going to with this new law, and so they created a company that helps a business, any small business or large business, whatever it might be, become compliant with the CCPA. And so it's just interesting to see that people are building businesses around these new laws, and I predict that a lot of the other states in the United States will start to follow suit, especially when you get bigger scares from large companies like Google and Facebook and what they're doing with your data. It's really causing a lot of uncertainty around the data that they have. And so, and because the internet is so new, I mean, if you think about it, it's only like 25 years old from a, commercialization perspective. And so they're, going to start implementing stricter and stricter regulations on businesses. To be more responsible with that data.
Right. And so you mentioned an interesting thing about kind of California being the first state to have really stringent state enacted legislation around consumer data privacy, right? There's other laws around the country, but I feel like, to your point, California is the one that's kind of leading the way on very strict guidelines and regulations, similar to what we've seen in Europe and GDPR. What do you think it will take for other states to kind of follow suit? Do you think it's already in process, right? This is just, the kind of first domino, if you will, or do you think it's going to take something more, more intense, more shocking to get more states on board?
I think it's a mix of both. I think there are other states, I'm not sure who I'm not certain about it, but I think there are other states that are examining this and seeing how it plays out. And so I think some states will start following suit with these kind of regulations and increase in law for these types of things. And then I think there will be other states that will follow suit once bigger problems happen, right? Maybe we expose another data privacy issue like we've seen with Facebook or some other company, and all of a sudden some of the other states start following through. And then at that point, it just becomes peer pressure. So then you have other states that start coming into the mix. That's my prediction. Now, I don't know if that's going to be, 5 years. I don't know if it's going to be 10 years, but I do see it over the next decade kind of transitioning across the United States.
I hope so. I definitely don't take the approach of, I've got nothing to hide here. What do I care about data privacy? But, it seems to be the sentiment in a number of people that, they're okay with, as you might hear, you're being the product, right? If I'm not buying the product, I am the product, right? My personal data and how valuable it is. But yeah, I hope that, this trend of kind of valuing our personal data and what that means to us continues with additional laws to kind of protect our privacy. John, this has been an absolutely fantastic conversation. I appreciate you for joining me. If people want to learn more about your work, where are some good places they could go to find that out?
Real simple. You can go to our website to check us out, see if we integrate with your system, see if Xylo would provide any value for you. So it's www.xylo, which is XILO period IO. Or you can just email me directly. I'm always willing to have a conversation with someone who's willing to learn. So that's JON@xylo.io as well.
Great. John, thank you so much again for joining us, and have a great day.
You too, Andrew. Thanks.
That does it for this edition of Insurance Requirements. If you haven't already, check out our website, howyouinsurethat.com, where you'll find episode archives as well as our blog, where we tackle different insurance topics from today's episode. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, pass it along to a friend or leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Until next time, I'm your host, Andrew Correll.